couple of hundred pounds of samples taken from the moon surface with the film that was shot on the moon and off the moon, and as the Endeavour circled the moon in orbit. And here comes Recovery 1, trailing its recovery basket. Or net, although it really is the net, the bottom of that basket is stiff. The sides of it are fortified, so there's not much give. I wish we knew the name of the astronauts, the first one to be taken aboard Recovery 1. Helicopter pilots like a little wind when they hover because helicopters use less power, and because there is no wind, and with that downwash and spray from the helicopters, there's a little problem in getting that recovery net into position. It is now in position. The command module is only about a quarter of a mile off the port or left side of the ship. And there goes the first astronaut. This, and you can hear some applause on the deck of the ship. This is probably the roughest ride he's had in the last few weeks.
You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the recovery of the Apollo 15 astronauts. Let's go back now to David Horowitz on the prime recovery ship, the USS Okinawa.
First-class Petty Officer Ernest Skeen of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. In 30 days, he retires after being in the Navy for 20 years. The first astronaut is aboard the recovery helicopter. As yet, we have no word which astronaut that is. Astronaut Colonel David Scott in the aircraft. Preparations for the brief ceremony that will take place aboard the ship are now being made. Several hundred men on deck have been told to leave the flight deck until the helicopters have landed. Another little round of applause as the second astronaut raised on that short trip out of the Pacific, about 330 miles north of Honolulu, back to the recovery helicopter that will bring him back to the Okinawa in just a few minutes. That was either astronaut Warden or Irwin, just through process of elimination. The second astronaut aboard the helicopter is Lieutenant Colonel James Irwin, the lunar module pilot. Major Alfred Warden, the command module pilot. The last of the three astronauts left in the
room. The aisle instructor are reminded to remove their hats and secure all items.
You can't really see this on your television screen now. But just off, I would say about maybe a mile and a half from the command module, is that Russian trawler, Malpa, coming in for a closer look. As the third astronaut Major Alfred Warden, the command module pilot, is hoisted aboard. You can imagine how they feel returning to land most historic and challenging mission to the moon. One which most of the people aboard this ship missed. Although we did get delayed tapes of the different EVAs and explorations of the moon, we missed a lot of the excitement of seeing it live. The three astronauts, reportedly feeling fine, safe aboard the recovery helicopter. And there in the background, you can see the Russian troller. An inquisitive tug. We're told that there are some women aboard that trawler who handle some of the mess detail. There are also some people aboard who speak English. And here comes the array of the helicopters. With three healthy and happy astronauts aboard Recovery One, the helicopters will maneuver in their standard flight pattern, which they've rehearsed for these last few months, veer off a little bit to the left, make a half circle, then head back right, then make another half circle, and come back to Okinawa. Of course, that command module is not being left untended. One helicopter is babysitting over it. The three frogmen who were dropped into the water also standing guard that command module. As that Russian trawler keeps getting closer, the two helicopters you see heading back to the ship are the recovery helicopter and also the photo helicopter. In a few seconds, you're going to be hearing a lot of rotor noise, and that will be the photographic helicopter landing first, allowing the photographers to get out and cover the welcome aboard ceremonies. Okinawa looks like from the photographic helicopter as it comes down on the deck. You can see that big banner in the astronaut's colors, red, white, and blue, saying, USS Okinawa, proud to assist you in your endeavor, referring to the name of the command module. Recovery One, now heading back over the command module. With one of the backup helicopters. Waiting for the photographic helicopter to take off again. Day, not only for the 650 people aboard this ship, but I guess for the whole world that's watching this recovery. What a trip to the moon, and a perfect return. As the recovery helicopter comes in, two motorized whale boats have been dispatched from Okinawa to retrieve some of the parachutes and other gear that was possibly jettisoned from the command module as it came down. Recovery one up against some puffy white and gray clouds, making a picturesque turn to Okinawa. Just saw a big puff of steam bellowing out of the stack of the ship. A welcome aboard from all of those in the engine room of Okinawa who can't be up on deck to say hello to the astronauts. And here comes Recovery One and astronauts Irwin, Scott, and Warden. The color guard from the Marine Barracks in Pearl Harbor, silhouetted against the recovery helicopter as it comes down for a very soft landing aboard Okinawa. Welcoming the astronauts when the rotor blades are turned down will be Dr. Robert Gilruth, the director of the Manned Space Center in Houston. Although Dr. Gilruth has been with the space program a number of years, this is the first recovery he's ever been out on. He also saw the blast off of the Cape, the first launch that he's ever seen. After these brief welcoming ceremonies, the astronauts will be taken down below decks where they will undergo 5 hours of intense medical examinations. After those examinations, they'll be eating their first Earth food, steak and potatoes, and juice of their choice. Tomorrow morning early, they will head back to Hickam Air Force Base for a brief ceremony before they're returned on an 8-hour flight to Houston. Expecting to arrive in Houston about 9 o'clock local time tomorrow night. There are the traditional white stairs placed up against the helicopter. White stairs, a red carpet for them to walk out on, then a blue carpet, the three colors that they selected for this mission, red, white, and blue. There you can see Dr. Gilruth. With all our flights to space, he's more excited than anyone else aboard the ship. Air Force him, and here come the astronauts. Dr. Gilruth shaking their hands. Aboard the ship, Admiral Thomas Hayward, the commander of the Pacific Sea Frontier. And here's the commander of Okinawa, Captain Andy Huff of Corsicana, Texas.
Colonel Scott, Colonel Irwin, Major Warden, it is indeed a pleasure to welcome you back from your historic mission. We were here to see you depart with your TLI burn, and it's even a greater pleasure to be here today.
Chaplain Peters, would you ask an invocation, please?
May we pray? Our Father, we're grateful for the success of this mission, for the work accomplished by astronauts Scott, Irwin, and Warden. As we learn of your universe, may we also learn of your purpose for mankind to live in peace. Amen.
Reverend Peters is known for his short prayers. That one was 41 words, including the amen.
Well, gentlemen, what can we say here in the recovery force but how great it is to have these three magnificent astronauts back here on the primary recovery ship? We had an exciting moment there, and it turned out just great. To these three astronauts, I say, as the commander of the recovery forces, that it's a great privilege for me to represent all of them in saying to them how proud we are and how great an accomplishment we think they have pulled off here and how professionally they have executed this lunar mission from Canaveral to the Loon and back here in the Pacific, back to USS Okinawa. Fellas, there's no group anyplace that has more pride in what you've done than this recovery force. And I say that not just as recovery force people, but as Americans. We're mighty proud of you. We have here today to represent the U.S. Air Force, and I must say to all of us, we're pretty well aware that this Apollo 15 crew is an all-Air Force contingent, and we're honored to have with us two of the Air Force's finest general officers, Brigadier General Pete Everest, who commands the Aerospace Rescue and Recovery Forces, and also General Clay, who has just taken over as Commander-in-Chief of all of the United States Air Force Pacific. And I know General Clay has some welcoming remarks he'd like to make. General?
Colonel Scott, Major Warden, and Colonel Irwin, certainly I'd want to offer my congratulations and welcome you home. I think particularly also you well realize the tremendous pride our nation takes in your accomplishments. And I'd be somewhat less than truthful if I didn't state also there's a peculiar glow that the Air Force feels as a result of your mission. More importantly, however, it seems to me that this mission represents the successful mission, Apollo 15, represents a culmination of a superb team effort on part of so many elements of our national life. The Executive Department, the Congress, scientists, and engineers. And I'm sure they all share with you the pride in the accomplishment. It suffices for me to say it's a tremendous thrill for me to be here to extend my congratulations. It's certainly been a wonderful and historic mission, and I can't help but also compliment you on your superb selection of music. Thank you.
Colonel Scott. Thank you, General Clay. And thank you, crew of the Okinawa. The crew of the Endeavor is glad to be aboard. We appreciate the fine pickup, and it's been my experience the Navy always makes a fine pickup, whether we land 6 miles from the carrier or 6,000. They're always there right on the spot, and we certainly appreciate it. It's great to be back. We had a great time on a trip. I think we accomplished a lot. We had a lot of support from a lot of people, and I'd just like to say that we appreciate every bit of it, and we could not have done the mission. We couldn't have gone one step without the support of the many, many thousands of people involved. Thank you very much.
Not that I'm shaky, it's just that I don't have my sea legs yet, you lucky stiffs. You've been out here for a while. We've just finished probably the most fantastic 12 days I've ever had in my life. And I guess only one thing surpasses the excitement and the intense feeling I had on the flight. And that was sort of the feeling I had when I saw you all today. It sure is nice to be back, and it sure is good to see you all. Thanks a bunch for the pickup.
This is a very proud moment for me. Proud to be part of this great team that could send us to the moon and bring us back. The recovery was just excellent. Of course, I feel very happy to be aboard a more seaworthy craft than we just got off of. Also, I'd like to say that I hope all of you all around the world enjoyed the our voyage to the moon as much as we did on the flight. Thank you all.
And the brief ceremony is over. There are about a dozen VIPs aboard, including six congressmen on various space committees. We're waiting here to see their first splashdown and shake hands with the astronauts. The astronauts look and sound well enough to have just returned from a walk around the block and not a trip to the moon. They will now go below deck to start an intensive five-hour physical examination before they have lunch later today and undergo debriefing. This afternoon, the astronauts will be treated to a slice of a 4x6 cake weighing 600 pounds. On it, a picture of the command module Endeavour, a model of the ship, and a model of the Hawaiian Islands. There you see the Okinawa, a proud ship today.
This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. From the USS Okinawa, you've been listening to a description of splashdown and recovery by pool reporter David Horowitz. Splashdown came at 20 hours 46 GMT just about 50 minutes ago. Total mission time from launch to splashdown, 295 hours 12 minutes. We'll have a summary of Apollo 15 highlights after this announcement.
Now, here is a special offer of a postcard photograph of the Apollo 15 astronauts seated in their lunar rover. Write to Apollo Postcard, Voice of America, Washington, D.C. Give your name and complete address, street number, city, and country. This offer is open to all listeners except residents and citizens of the United States. The supply is limited. For your postcard photograph of the Apollo 15 crew, write to Apollo Postcard, Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
The mission began on July 26th with the final moments of a long countdown that had unrolled with few interruptions.
10, 9, 8, ignition sequence start, engines on, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All engines running. Launch commit. Liftoff. We have liftoff at 9:34 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Astronauts David Scott, Jim Irwin, and Al Worden were underway. But unlike previous astronauts who kept up a steady stream of comments on the beauty of the view and the sensations they felt, these flyers were unusually quiet. A television program beamed to Earth from the command ship Endeavour appeared to be a silent movie. So quiet were the performers. Mission Control in Houston wondered aloud whether the crew was in fact aboard.
Jim, are all three people still there?
All here, busy doing little things.
But all that changed as Endeavour neared the moon. Since Apollo 8, 21 astronauts had seen the moon from up close, and the newest trio was as awed by it as had been the first.
Houston, we're over Mare Crisium at the present time, and the sights are really striking. I guess some of the interesting things we've noted is the variation in albedo, from white to dark gray, with many variations of gray in between. And many times this albedo change appears without any significant change in topography, other than perhaps a mountain ridge or a chain or a wrinkle ridge or something. But there are many variations in the albedo all over the surface.
The first experiment on the moon took place prior to landing on its surface. The spent third-stage rocket engine that carried Endeavour aloft was deliberately crashed onto the moon so its impact could be recorded by seismometers left by Apollo 11, 12, and 14. This was the sound they transmitted back to Earth. The landing of the Lunar Module Falcon was the most difficult yet, involving a tricky approach across a high mountain chain, the Apennines, and close to a deep canyon, Hadley Rill. Using both manual control and computer-directed instruments, Scott and Irwin set down right in the middle of their target area. After a preliminary survey of the site from the open hatch of the Falcon, they began the first of three excursions in the rover. Like any man with a new automobile, they were anxious to try out the $8 million rover. Despite some problems at first with the steering controls, they were pleased.
This is really a rock and rolling ride, isn't it? Never been on a ride like this before. Oh, boy. I'm glad they got this great suspension system on this thing.
Using the rover, Scott and Irwin explored in three directions, collecting rock samples all the time, carefully documented as to time and place of discovery. The laconic responses of the first hours of the mission were replaced by genuine excitement as new kinds of rocks were found.
Hey, look at that light-colored rock with almost looks like a white vein on top of the other rock.
Yeah, look at that. How about that? We'll get that one.
Get it now.
Yeah, it's a breccia. It's a dark gray rock that looks like a big pinnacle with a small gray and white breccia on top of it. The pinnacle is about 6 inches across and 4 or 5 inches high. On top of it is about a 2 to 3 inch subangular frag with a light gray or medium gray matrix and about 20% white clast in it. Very unique. Stands out. It's amazing.
And not long afterward, another discovery, possibly the most important one of the moon program thus far.
Guess what we just found? I think we found what we came for. Crystal rock, huh? Yes, sir. You better believe it.
Yep,
put
sir.
Pledge in there. Almost all pledge.
She likes it.
As a matter of fact, oh boy, I think we might have ourselves something close to the north of site. Because it's crystalline in there. Just a bunch of just almost all pledge. What a beaut.
That is really a beauty. And there's another one down there.
Yeah, we'll get some of these.
Bag it up.
Ha! Beautiful. Hey, let me get some of that quad there. No, let's make this a special one. I'll zip it up. Okay, make this bag number 196 a special bag.
I think we found what we came for. What we came for was hard crystalline rock that could give Earth scientists valuable clues to the origin of the moon and the Earth. Bag 196 will be of special interest to geologists as they determine whether it contains, in fact, some of the oldest rock on the moon. One of the theories about the origin of the moon is that it was somehow separated from the mass of the Earth itself and became a satellite of our planet. Another theory holds that the moon was created independently of the Earth and was later captured by Earth's stronger gravitational field. Dr. Harold Urey, the Nobel Prize-winning scientist who discovered heavy water, explained one method scientists will use to solve the problem with the aid of lunar rock samples.
Well, let me say what I would regard as a very important atom. Iodine-129 is radioactive, and plutonium, radioactive. And we know from our study of the meteorites that these radioactive elements were made just shortly before the solar system went together. Now, if I could find evidence for these having been present in the moon and have produced their decay products, which belong in the field of xenon-129, xenon-134 and xenon-136, if I could see that these are definitely present in higher concentrations than in the Earth, then I would know that the materials of the moon are older than the materials of the Earth. And this would be a very strong argument in favor of the moon having been captured. This is a datum that I'm looking for. It hasn't appeared yet, in my opinion, or in the opinion of other people studying the subject, but I'm always looking for it.
Dr. Harold Urey, some discoveries do not even depend upon the return of samples to Earth. Simple observation by trained observers was sufficient. NASA scientists gave one example at a news conference.
It is rather interesting, though, that a few hours ago we did not know whether the lava that filled the enormous circular basins on the moon, Mare Imbrium being the largest, came out all at one time or in several episodes, and right now we know that it came out in many, many episodes. We saw layering in the rill this one sentence alone was in many ways perhaps worth the trip. Of course, we had a lot more sentences to go with it, so that makes it extra nice.
And after 67 hours on the moon, longer than all three previous missions combined, astronauts Scott and Irwin blasted off.
This liftoff, automatic.
Off we go into the wild blue yonder, the song of the U.S. Air Force, broadcast from the Falcon as it rose to join the Endeavour. The two units linked, and then Falcon was deliberately crashed onto the moon for another seismic observation, this time with an additional observatory in place. Two more days of experiments in lunar orbit followed, and then Endeavour's engine was fired to send Apollo 15 back toward Earth. Technicians awaited word on that critical firing, which occurred behind the moon, out of radio range. Then...
Hello, Houston. Endeavour's on the way home.
Halfway along that long journey home, the astronauts held a televised news conference. The question submitted by newsmen in Houston and read up to Apollo 15 by NASA communicators. In response to one question, David Scott emphasized the smoothness of the mission, contrary to a newsman's impression that there had been many technical problems along the way.
Well, I guess we weren't aware we had that many problems. I thought this was a rather trouble-free flight myself. We went a long way. We spent a long time doing the job, and I think relative to the number of systems we have in all the spacecraft, that we had very few problems. I can think of none that were significant that would enable me to compare it with Gemini 8 at all. We had first little problem we had was a leak in our water system, which was cleared up rather rapidly by somebody having already done some investigation and having a procedure at hand. I believe our system is such that people have all the anticipated problems understood, and when they have them understood, they come up with solutions which are quite meaningful and successful. And I feel like the spacecraft and the life support systems on the moon and everything worked exceedingly well. I guess, really, I couldn't ask for much more.
And so the Apollo 15 crew came back to Earth with a precious cargo of rocks and film filling every available space in the cabin, and content in the knowledge that every gram of rock and every square centimeter of film would be studied intensely by scientists all over the world. And they would all surely agree with David Scott's observation as he stepped onto the moon at Hadley. It is part of our nature. Man must explore. Those are the highlights of Apollo 15. VOA correspondent Rhett Turner and astronaut Fred Hayes have been with the Apollo 15 mission every minute of the way. Let's join them at the Manned Spacecraft Center for their observations on what has just happened and what the future might hold.
Well, Fred, that was one of the most efficient entries back to Earth, recapping briefly what we've just witnessed here this afternoon, wouldn't you say? And as we mentioned also, the first time, however, that we've had one parachute that it opened at first and then it collapsed later. I hope that that'll be able to be solved. But otherwise, it was a quite efficient entry and pickup, don't you think?
Well, the entry phase just followed down the same vein as I think the Apollo 15 mission has gone from start to finish. It's been a very successful mission, and that they've pretty well accomplished everything that was laid down to get done in the flight plan, and all the equipment has worked very well, including a great array of brand new equipment that we've flown on this mission.
Well, I think you've touched on what I think we might expand in looking into the reasons that Apollo 15 was able to accomplish so much. With this mission, the astronauts are using what is called the J series of Apollo spacecraft. Let's explain what that means.
Well, the J mission involves a bigger lunar module and a bigger command module, at least in terms of the consumables, the stay-time capability, the extra oxygen and extra water, and in the case of the LEM, extra large descent tanks for the descent engine to get all that weight in the ground. The LEM, of course, had the added feature of the rover vehicle, which greatly increased the mobility in the ground, the coverage you can get, and look at various contacts between geologic units, as well as sample a greater number of different geologic units. The experimental ALSEP package that we left was more extensive than their predecessors.
Now, that's the package which was left on the surface of the moon, the science experiments out there being run by this nuclear power generator.
Right. And then, of course, a great big added bonus was the SIM bay that's on the command module, the service module part of it, that's packed with experiments.
That's called the Scientific Instrument Module. The J series of command and service modules added extra capacity for just filling the whole back end of the machine with these cameras and measuring devices.
To give some feel for the what has been to date, at least, and it's a very preliminary because the amount of data produced is almost beyond the system's capability to fathom and to sort out that overnight. But just in terms of amount of footage of film, that SIM bay took the equivalent of 60 arbiters.
Lunar, or the unmanned
lunar arbiters, the same amount of footage in terms of coverage of the moon. I guess it's somewhere 10 to 20% of the surface of the moon was covered on this particular flight due to the particular high inclination orbit it was in. With
in other words, the Al Worden was in an orbit which swung up farther north and farther south as he circled the moon than any of the previous flights. Some 26.5 degrees north and 26 or so degrees south of the lunar equator.
And of course, the moon is also turning the whole time he was up there, so his orbit is shifting a little bit left and right on each path. The other thing that was of great interest was the mass spectrometer, which can measure particles that enter into its inlet port, determine their atomic weight. To date, they've only looked at two passes.
This
two
is pure
orbits.
Science.
Yes,
pure
and
science.
They had a very strong indication of carbon dioxide being emitted on the backside of the moon at a backside terminator, which is, it's a little hard to say right now what that all means, but it is a fact that was not expected.
In other words, around on the side of the moon not facing Earth, some carbon dioxide apparently is being emitted from within the moon. This could point towards some volcanism or some sort of outgassing in that material in the dark side of the moon, which has never been examined before by instruments.
Right. To date, of course, have only hand-analyzed two revolutions, and one had it showed it, one revolution did not, so they've still got a lot of work to do on that one.
Then the third thing added really was the small satellite left in orbit around the moon.
Yes, this guy is looking at magnetic fields, and it has the benefit of you're being able to correlate the data that this thing sees in orbit with respect to the magnetometer that we left on the lunar surface, which is still operating. And so you can get correlation over the phases of the moon, if you will, as it points a different face toward the sun. And it is, of course, working perfectly with respect to they're clearly seeing it whistling through the magnetosphere and in and out of that particular area, and also it is the particle measuring part of the device is also working splendidly.
This is measuring the very basic relationship of the sun and the moon, and through interpolation, the Earth. Now, this is a more pure science that's of immense interest and importance to mankind's future, to what beyond the Earth. Norm Guerin and Les Higby, would you care to join this conversation with us?
Well, I was going to ask something along the human interest lines, Rhett. There's no quarantine period this time, and maybe Fred Hayes knows how the astronauts feel about this.
I bet you're glad of that.
Yes, they're, of course, as you know, have been in a manner of speaking, locked up for 3 weeks before launch, and have now been gone a little over 12 days. So they've already been kind of out of touch with things for the order of a month. So they really wouldn't be looking forward to getting quarantined for another 3 weeks. It of course, for a short period of quarantine, had the advantage of keeping you isolated so you could very efficiently do all the post-flight debriefings and get your reports written and look at the film and answer questions people may have about that, possibly in a little less disturbing environment.
This is while things are fresh in mind. Here's the doctor, the flight surgeon Clarence Jernigan.
Down below, but on a preliminary look, all three crewmen look real good. All three look real good. No problems whatever.
That was Dr. Clarence Jernigan, the astronaut's flight surgeon, who's just made his preliminary examination of the three astronauts, Dave Scott, Al Worden, and Jim Irwin, on the carrier deck of the Okinawa. Incidentally, just a step beyond what you were commenting upon, Fred, the astronauts will be flown by helicopter to Hickam Field early tomorrow morning, Hawaii time, at about 8 o'clock. They will board an Air Force C-141 for Houston, and they'll be home, landing here at the Manned Spacecraft Center at 9 o'clock Sunday night, tomorrow night, and go home to their families. I'm sure that is going to be a wonderful experience. Can't you imagine the welcome home?
Well, there's welcome homes and there's welcome homes. I guess certainly my experience on Apollo 13... It's very nice just to get back to the family and the friends, and it's also, of course, for them a very elated moment, I'm sure, from having felt that they tackled a very exotic, a very complex mission, and they, as a crew, performed very well and had a very successful mission, and I'm sure they feel a great deal of personal satisfaction from that aspect.
Well, thank you so much, Fred Hayes and Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. That was the total mission time from liftoff of the pad at Cape Kennedy to splashdown in the Pacific north of Pearl Harbor of 295 hours, 11 minutes, and 52 seconds. Splashdown came at 20 hours, 46 GMT. The spacecraft Endeavour, with its three astronauts, has returned to Earth, ending a highly successful 295-hour mission. That splashdown time was 20 hours, 46 minutes GMT in the Pacific Ocean, about 500 kilometers north of Pearl Harbor. The astronauts are now aboard the prime recovery ship USS Okinawa, which will take them to Pearl Harbor for transport tomorrow back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston. The astronauts are now undergoing physical examinations aboard the USS Okinawa. So, an ambitious lunar exploration program, with all of the Apollo 15 goals accomplished, has come to an end. Those goals can be summed up like this: a 67-hour stay on the lunar surface, twice as long as before, extra mobility resulting in three extensive traverses of the Hadley-Apennine area of the moon, with exceptional performance being turned in by the Lunar Rover, the first four-wheeled transit vehicle to be used on the lunar surface. In addition, a new scientific research station was deployed to send data back to Earth for months and even years to come. And all of these activities were recorded in truer fidelity than ever before by color television cameras for scientists and viewers back here on Earth. There was even more to come on the way home to Earth, with a spacewalk by Alfred Worden to retrieve exposed orbital science films, pictures of a lunar eclipse, and, of course, the now traditional press conference from space. The highlights of the flight of Apollo 15, and next on the Apollo flight calendar, a mission to the Descartes Highlands section of the moon scheduled for March 1972. Our thanks to astronaut Fred Hayes and Don Beatty of the National Aeronautics and Space Agency for assisting us during the 12-day mission. To VOA correspondent Rhett Turner, Ed Hickey, Jim Miller, and all of the behind-the-scenes crew for their support. For Les Higbee, this is Norman Guerin at the Apollo News Center in Washington. This program has come to you from the United States of America.